Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. News and Information Hour here on this, is this Wednesday night? Yeah.
Yeah, I took the trash out and everything.
Yay, he remembered. Finally remembered to take the trash out.
I remember taking the trash out, just didn't know what the day.
Well, anyway, you got the trash out, so did they come?
I don't know.
Well, you might want to check the cans and see if they, we have at the studio here, obviously, just like at the house. You know, we get trash pickup. They pick up the commercial trash. Do they pick it up on a different day, right?
Yeah, they pick up the commercial trash on a Wednesday and pick up on a residential trash another day.
Well, I don't know what it is, but in any event, we forgot to take the trash out here for a couple of weeks running, man. And boy, oh boy, I don't know what you're eating, bud, but man, it stunk like an open grave in there.
Our dog's eating a pizza.
Yeah, but something else.
Was it that sushi from up the street?
Yeah, probably, yeah, but what are you talking about?
I'm talking about how it stunk to high heaven in there, man. If you're going to eat anything, man, if don't throw... Can I just hip you to something here, okay?
No, but you throw it in the garbage.
Wait a minute, bud. Meat, any organic thing like meat or fruit, throw it into the garbage disposal.
I try to tell him, man. He won't listen to me.
You got to throw it in the garbage disposal, bud. If you throw it in the garbage can, it stinks because it starts to rot. Okay?
That way to get the flies are created?
Is that why flies are created?
Yeah, from the rotted out meat.
No, flies are not created by rotted out. Oh. You know what Bud is talking about there?
What?
You're talking about what was actually stated belief for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was called generation or spontaneous generation. Did you know that?
What?
People believed, scientists believed, the average person believed that flies were created by rotten meat.
What, ain't they?
Are you an idiot or something, man? A fly didn't created by the meat.
Not asking you.
No, they're not created by rotten meat. Are you nuts? What are you, out of your mind?
I don't know.
Flies are flies. They're attracted to rotten meat. Rotten meat doesn't create flies. But they used to think hundreds of years ago, up until about 200 years ago, they used to think that mud created frogs.
Now, that I don't believe.
Oh, well, give the man a round of applause. They used to think that rotten meat created flies. They used to think that mud created frogs. They used to think all kinds of things. It was called spontaneous generation. This was what science went on this ridiculous stuff. Until one day... There was a curious guy out there. I don't know what the hell his name was. It might have been that guy, Leonuk, that I was reading about, the guy with the microscope. In any event, he took a piece of meat and he put a glass over top. Something as simple as that, put a glass over top of it.
But what's that supposed to do?
That keeps everything away from it. In other words, there's no insects, no bugs, no flies, no nothing. He put a glass on top of this piece of meat, and he sat and he stared at it for days and days and days, and he saw as it got rotten, and he saw as it, you know, began to putrefy. But guess what? No flies were created. And it was that scientist who later said to his fellows, can you imagine, I mean, we laugh today. You imagine a guy standing there in front of the National Science Academy in Paris or something. And I can tell you, I put glass over this meat. It didn't create flies. But he did. He said, no way, because look what I did. Well, now, what are you trying to say? What am I trying to say? I'm trying to tell you that the rotten meat didn't create flies. Flies come from somewhere else. They're attracted to the rotten meat. And they fly to the rotten meat, and they make little flies. And the frogs are not made by mud. Frogs just like nice, wet, muddy rivers. And they like to go there and live there. That's really a lot of fun for frogs, and so they're attracted by that, see?
What if the frogs living far away? How do they get there?
Probably, like, what would they do, walk?
Yeah, I guess they'd walk. No, they'd take public transit. Are you guys nuts?
I don't know. I don't know how they...
public transit.
Yeah, that's real funny. You guys trying to be funny?
No, I just wonder if the frog, is a frog just born where it's muddy, or does the frog have to walk to it?
Frogs are born where it's muddy because the other frogs came there.
Then they do make frogs.
No, they don't, you moron. Did you listen to me? The frogs go to the mud, and the frogs live in the mud, and they dig it in the mud. That's their kind of life, okay? To each his own. And they make little frogs. And the little frogs live in the mud. And what do you know? The next thing you know, well, a bunch of frogs are living in the mud. Why? Because it's really bitching in the mud. They dig it. Right there in the Nile River or the Mississippi River, all the big rivers, all the frogs like to live there. If it was dry and it was dusty and it was nasty, they'd get the hell out of there and they'd go and they'd find some other muddy area. But this is also what causes the extinction of some species. When the environment changes, when all of a sudden what used to be muddy becomes dry, and there's the frog who loves the mud and he goes, where the hell's the mud? And then, as Robert just said, then they have to walk to it. And if they have to walk too far, they croak, if you'll pardon the expression.
Get a frog croak. That's pretty good, man. All right.
Get out of here. Why do I feel there's an iron swine coming up?
Maybe.
Anyway, so if the frogs don't find any mud, then they die, and that's it for the mud frogs. They're extinct because there's no more mud, and the mud frogs are extinct. That's why you have extinct species. You know, the dinosaurs are gone because the environment they lived in no longer existed and they couldn't figure out a way. They weren't adaptable. Human beings, on the other hand, are very adaptable. That's why we've continued to thrive no matter what the weather. We can live in cold. We can live in hot.
Yeah, but we can make, like, we put on, like, a jacket.
Well, yeah, that's how we're adaptable. We're adaptable. Dinosaurs couldn't adapt. They didn't put on jackets. Dinosaurs couldn't invent air conditioning.
But if they had invented air conditioning, they'd still be here?
If dinosaurs could invent air conditioning, man, yeah, they'd probably still be here. They probably would have invented a whole lot of other stuff. If they could have invented air conditioning, are you serious?
Would they still be here?
No, they wouldn't still be. I don't know. Get out of here, Robert, will you?
No, that's a dumb question. If they still, yeah, of course they'd be here.
They'd be intelligent creatures if they invented air conditioning, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So they would probably still be here, man, because if they could invent air conditioning, maybe they're inventing something else. Maybe cars, maybe dinosaur car. I don't know, but that didn't happen. So human beings, on the other hand, we're very adaptable. We invent all kinds of crap to live wherever the hell it is that we want to live. And we even live in some places that are weird. We're weird. We're weird, man. Do you get it? We're weird. All the other animals walk on four legs. What do? We walk on two.
Except birds.
True. But even the birds use those other two appendages, their wings, for mobility.
You just flap your arms like a bird.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's going to be on a video cast.
Great. Let it be on a video cast. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, to get from point A to point B, birds must use all four of their limbs. They use their little feet to walk around, but if they want to take off and fly, they got to use their wings. So the only creature on Earth that does not rely on four of its limbs to achieve locomotion, if you will, is the human being. We do not need our arms to move around.
What about an ostrich?
Even an ostrich's wings are used or have been used at times to transport oneself or one ostrich's self. I don't know. All right, anyway, welcome to the show, folks, as we just, what a load, man.
Well, you're talking about the dirty meat and everything.
I was talking about you guys taking the garbage out. And then you're the guy that got me sidetracked with, doesn't that would be flies?
Well, I just wonder if it did.
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't, bud. No, that's, but like, about, actually, I'm glad you brought it up because that is a, I wonder if there are actually people who believe that.
What?
Do you think there are other human beings like Bud that believe that, you know, rotten meat creates flies?
Yeah, they're black. Eight.
Yeah, you're right. Eight-year-olds, they're right with you, Bud, on that.
You know, that's somebody.
That's right, that's somebody. You have your constituents, man, I'll tell you that. All right, we're going to look into Mitt Romney and the whole thing that went down on Super Tuesday yesterday. Very funny headline. I mean, I got to laugh. Romney encourages rivals to fold. No way, they say. Like, are you kidding, Romney? They're not going to fold, man. They're not going to. They should. They really should. Somebody should fold because I don't know how a Republican Party that can't seem to figure out whether it wants to be a Santorum Republican Party or a Mitt Romney Republican Party, how it has any idea, first of all, what it really stands for, and secondly, how it is going to attack the problem of Barack Obama in the fall. But we'll talk about it here. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour. We'll give you some news on going to our table read today for New Girl on Fox, and we'll talk about the L.A. Animation Festival as well, which is coming up in our next break. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth, is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Our next segment, I mean.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Now, time for Iron Swine on Phil Hendry Show.
And this week, Iron Swine, they get a call. Iron Swine get a call from a man and a garbage stink.
Yeah, there's a piece of meat in his garbage that stinks it up. You're going to go over there now. Iron Swine arrived. Yes, sir?
Yeah, my house, man, stink.
That's on account you got the meat in there.
Yeah, I noticed I got flies, too. If I don't get rid of that dead meat, you're going to make more flies.
That's a load.
What are you talking about?
Here, take this meat now. Well, ew.
Better throw that out, man.
That's a diaper.
Later on, Iron Swine had to go back to the office, and he had to sanitize his hands and make a man accept and everything because he stuck his hand in the baby's diaper.
Damn it, anyway, get the diaper out of there. I'm going to show you something. Give me a piece of meat.
How about this?
Why, you pervert? Ow! You're under arrest.
Iron Swine arrested that one guy for showing him that meat. Now I go to another guy's house.
Same problem, huh, Stinks?
Yeah.
Give me a piece of meat and not like the other guy did.
Oh, here.
Now watch this. I'll put it under a piece of glass. Or I mean, have you got a tumbler or something?
Yeah, you have a tumbler.
That's a Flintstone tumbler. I can't see through it. I see the meat. What's this?
A condom?
You're under arrest. That's two guys he put in jail.
Yeah. Is this going to be done anytime soon?
Yeah, hold on.
Hold on.
Put this meat under the glass, and in 2 weeks, call me back.
Well, 2 weeks went by, and I called up Iron Swine. Hey, look at this, man. There ain't no fly or anything.
And you're not under arrest.
This has been Iron Swine.
You guys are full of crap.
What?
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. Iron Swine, give me a piece of meat. You're under arrest.
Yeah, well, the guy put out...
I know what he did. All right, well, okay, so Iron Swine... You know, I didn't know that about Iron Swine. Not only does he... Not only does he fight crime, but he also, you know...
Yeah, you help people out with science projects.
Exactly. That's outstanding. Thank you very much, Iron Swine, for clearing that up for us here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show in our news and information hour. So... here's what happened yesterday, or last night, or whenever it happened, and I want to clarify this. It's interesting. It's very interesting. It's interesting. It's maddening. There's an awful lot of backlash now that's happening. Sometime yesterday, I was made aware of this. I was made aware of it actually by my godson Joe. He and I are in touch with each other on Twitter, and. Although I'm going to have to drop him one of these days if he keeps up with those Laker tweets, man. You're driving me nuts with those, Joe. You're out of your mind. Everything, the sky's falling with this guy, man.
Geez, I think the Lakers are going to stink.
Well, the Lakers may stink, okay, but they don't stink right now. They just beat the Heat, excuse me. Am I imagining that they just beat, like, one of, if not the best team in the NBA? And he's with him and his friends with those Laker tweets about how, oh, God, they're the worst team. Anyway, so I'm seeing this... Coney, K-O-N-Y, #Coney, hashtag all over Twitter, and all kinds of cats. Tim Tebow had the top tweet last night, and Tim Tebow had, you know, you really got to see this video, but everybody was talking about this video. So I watched the video, and it was, if I could remember the name of the filmmaker, I got his last name, Russell. He's a father, he's got a little boy. As a matter of fact, it's an interesting, it's a little kind of an interesting point in the film where he actually filmed his son's birth, and then you see this child, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later, in a park on a carousel. The boy figures prominently in his father's film. A couple of things were disturbing to me. One was the father involving the child in, he was talking to his child and saying, who's the bad guy, son? Who's the, there's the bad guy, Coney. And I don't know, there's something ghoulish about that.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, the Coney guy's a bad guy. I think, and I'm not even saying that young people shouldn't be involved in a political movement like that. But I think maybe, you know, if junior high on up, I don't know. It just, it seems, but having said that, it's a very well-meaning man. And he had this film about this guy, Joseph Kony, who has this Lord's Revolutionary Party or guerrilla army. And this guy is a real piece of, just a piece of crap. He has been kidnapping and conscripting into service as rebel fighters, children, throughout Uganda and elsewhere in Africa for decades. Children gone from their families. Just, can you imagine that? Your child has been taken away and turned into a guerrilla fighter in the mountains. And there you are in your home and in your life, and you don't know what happened to your child. It turns out your child is a member of some entity that is making life miserable for yourself and your neighbors in this nightmare world where your country is still struggling for survival against all kinds of threats. And anyway, this film talked about this army and the kidnapping of these children. There's one part of it that just, you know, I wanted to break down and cry. He talked to this one little boy who talked about his brother dying in one of these rebel assaults. And you can't, it's hard to think about. But in any event, this filmmaker and his friends put together a couple of things they did for the people, the villagers. And I mentioned in the pre-show, they have a early warning radio system in the villages where the people can alert the village and alert people in the interior of this perimeter that this rebel army is in the area. And just small things like that. It seems very small, too, because if you're, you know, if you're fighting a rebel army, if you're fighting a guerrilla army, trained guerrillas living out in the jungle, what chance do you have unless you've got weapons yourself and a trained defense force of some kind? So I don't really, it's just, it's amazing. So nonetheless, when this film became, it went viral and everyone on Twitter started hashtagging Coney, K-O-N-Y is his name, Joseph Coney. It became a matter of, you know, many, many thousands of tweets and everybody basically saying the same vague thing. You know, F Coney and Coney burn in hell and Coney this, Coney that, and Coney 2012. Okay, fine, but that don't exactly get a guy vaporized, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you were talking about that in the pre-show, and I was just thinking that if people start to know who the guy is, then people's going to do something.
By what?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, like, nobody knows about the guy.
Okay, nobody knows about the United States government knows about the guy. The U.S. government, the governments in Europe, they know about the guy. He is not a secret to the State Department, the United States defense apparatus. The problem is this, and it's very simply this. What are you talking about, man, when you say, what is America going to do about it? Now, diplomatically, there ain't nothing we can do. This is a military problem, period.
We could send the SEALs in.
Oh, sure, we could send the SEALs in. Let me just say something to you, bud. You know, you have to get government's permission for this stuff, and the SEALs are not miracle workers. There's a great series on Behind SEAL Team 6. They go into these different operations. If they don't have the support of a government, they are flat out of luck. The SEALs can't get anything done. If they're dealing with a corrupt regime, if they're dealing with a corrupt military, and the SEALs have had to deal with all of that stuff. The SEALs go in and they train these local fighters or they train these members of a corrupt militia or military, and it's like they're going, what are we doing here, man? We're not doing any good. Going into Africa, into Uganda, or any of these neighboring countries and doing what? Training the forces? They have to be trainable. They have to want us there. And the thing that really irritates the living hell out of me is that the very people that have been tweeting Coney this and Coney that, who want to get rid of this guy, don't kid me, man. These are the very same people that have a basic aversion to the military. They got an aversion to preemptive military action. And they probably have got an aversion to funding the military. And now they're talking about Coney, what a piece of garbage he is. So what do you cats want to do, man? Chant Hare Krishna and the guy's going to go away?
Yeah, you talk about turning him into an apple.
Yeah, and I was kidding, too. Wow.
Oh, man, are you kidding me?
I'm just joking.
Yeah, sure. All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show with more on Coney and your mama. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, hashtag mama.
Hashtag mama. Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
It is the world famous Phil Henry Show, and welcome back here on number 877-876-PHIL, although it is our news and information hour, and rolling on Phil TV and HD right now is not the Coney video that was created by Jason Russell. That's the name of the filmmaker. It is actually a news story on ITV covering the film made by Jason Russell called Invisible Children, and what's going on around this thing. And, you know, I got to tell you, this was an ITN thing, so...
What's that?
ITN is just it's a British a TV production company, television network. Nonetheless, so, okay, so that's what's happening. It's a cause among many, and there are certainly many in this world. This one is pretty brutal, and this is a guy that has gotten everybody's attention by way of a very, very good film that he did. And the bigger issue is the idea that children are separated from families for years and years and years, kidnapped for years and years and years by a warlord, essentially, in Africa. Now, people ask, how the hell can that stuff happen? This is the post-colonial world. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you take away the colonial constraints and the colonial administration that was in existence for hundreds of years in places like Africa and the Middle East, and the people revert to tribal instinct or cultural instinct that was that originated in that part of the world. They no longer have the Western or European way of doing things clamped on top of them. They now have they are now left to the instinctive things that they would have done had they been, you know, allowed to create their own world. But it's been many, many years, and many of those traditions are either lost or they've been warped. Many of them have been destroyed completely. You know, I've often used the comparison of locking a kid in a closet for 10 years and then opening the closet and saying, okay, go ahead, you're free now. I mean, only an imbecile would think that that kid has got a fighting chance going to the bathroom, let alone doing anything else. Well, it's not too far different when you take away from a country or a people the way they do things and you say, well, this is how it's going to be done instead. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. And boom, 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 beam, beam, beam. That's this and that's that. And the next thing you know, wars break out. And the thing that broke down the Ottoman Empire was World War I. And the thing that broke down the British control of the Middle East was World War II. See?
What do you mean?
What I mean is, World War I destroyed the Turkish Ottoman Empire. That was a 400-year-old entity. That was a Muslim caliphate. It was what Osama bin Laden wanted to bring back. I mean, these guys are mental. But nonetheless, World War I, that was the end of the Ottoman Empire. It broke into tiny pieces. The Arab states, the Arab people who'd been promised statehood by the British, of course, that wasn't going to happen. The British took over administration of the majority of the Middle East. And then along came World War II. And that was Germany down there talking to the Arabs and saying, well, now you don't need these Brits, baby. We can do the whole thing for you. That Grand Mufti dude. You remember that guy we saw on TV?
Yeah, that guy, he's a Nazi.
That Grand Mufti bastard from Jerusalem, he went up and broke bread with Hitler. Or whatever it is that Hitler breaks.
Breaks a lot of people's heads.
Well, he should have busted the Grand Mufti's head while he was on the subject. Nonetheless, when that whole thing went down, then the British Empire, that was the end of the British. The World War II was the end of the British. It was the end of their empire. It was the end of their administration in the Middle East and what was left. Now you got all these little states, Syria and Iraq and Iran and Erib and everything. And you've got Saudi Arabia and the whatever the hell, the Emirates, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and a new player on the scene, Israel. And that, of course, as you know, was welcomed with open arms down there in the Middle East. Not. Well, the same thing in Africa. And that was it sort of took a different course. World War I and World War II, while they while the principals fought it out in Africa over who gets what, the fact is that things didn't really begin to break down in Africa until the 50s and 60s. And suddenly these states, which were at one time called the Belgian Congo, the Spanish Sahara, and crap like that, now these are free countries, and now these are people that are trying to pull it together. And the African people, like the people of the Middle East, they got their way of doing things. They were tribal. They're not national. They're tribal. It's a different way of organizing a society. It happened to be their way. And it was the way they did it because it was the geography they lived in. It was the climate they lived in, the environment they lived in. That was the best way to do it. So they weren't marking off territory by way of hard and fast boundaries. They were saying, that's yours there, this is mine here, you come over here, you get permission from me, I go here, you go there. Same thing with, like, Indians.
Yeah, with the Indians, they would go anywhere.
No, they didn't, man. That scalped if you went in the wrong place.
Well, I don't know, man, but they didn't have, like, they didn't draw up some freaking boundary that said, this is the Indian land.
Yeah, it was all Indian land.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though, these different tribes, so... It was only in Europe and other places where the tribal was secondary to the larger national interest. Why? Why?
I don't know. Probably because they had more stuff.
They had more stuff. That's exactly right. They had more stuff. Not only did they have more stuff, they needed a bigger bureaucracy, they needed bigger armies to defend it, and suddenly it was no longer workable to say, well, this is my tribe, that's your tribe. No, to hell with that. Let's band our tribes together and form a nation. That's what they did in Europe, and they only did that in Europe and in other places because they had this abundance of they had a lot of interest to protect, and it wasn't just tribal interest. They had banded together with this tribe and that tribe and this tribe till the next thing you know, they had a nation. And so things evolved differently. And when Europe decided, let's take our national model and stick it on a bunch of people that are tribal, stuff goes wrong, baby. It goes real wrong. Real wrong.
I seen that Lawrence of Arabia one time. He put on that headdress, went down there and said, you remember seeing that?
Yeah, he said, the Arab people are little people.
Yeah, he said, the Arab people are little people.
I don't know, man. What are you talking about? Lawrence of Arabia?
Yeah.
Well, that guy, he was in the British Secret Service, this guy Lawrence, and he went down there and he told the Arabs a whole bunch of horse dung so they would fight on the side of the British to fight the Turks. Okay?
Is that what they were doing?
Yes, that's what they were doing. He put on the headdress, he did the whole thing, and he made himself an Arab, and he spoke Arabic, and he broke bread with the Arabs, and he talked to them as if they were his brothers and his equals. And he did like the Arab people, and he did appreciate them, and he did fight for them, and he went into battle with them. But he knew, Lawrence knew all along what was going on. He was working on behalf of the British, and once the British were able to defeat the Turks with the help of the Arabs weren't going to get diddly squat. They were going to be under the thumb of the British, and that's exactly what happened. So... You know, talk about blowback. You know, I love people talking about blowback as if they know what it really is. They think American blowback is bad. We're still eating dirt for all of that stuff. All right, so there's that. Now we have this series of primaries yesterday that was called Super Tuesday. Yeah, I'll bet it was, man.
Yeah, Romney kicked ass.
No, he didn't kick ass. No, he didn't kick ass. Although he did win Ohio. I was watching CNN when we were out working last night, and CNN had those numbers from Ohio, man. Very impressive. They had on the board Santorum leads, but I heard Anderson Cooper and Wolf Blitzer. I'm kidding, Blitzer. In any event, the two of them were jumping up and down and slapping their hands together and saying, guess what? Those numbers are not real. And I remember thinking, okay, well, then put the real ones up there.
Yeah, they couldn't do it, though, but they didn't have no permission.
Yeah, they got to get permission from the Secretary of the Ohio.
I know that, but I just wish that they would have been clear. All right, Romney says he's on track to get a nominating majority before convention rivals undeterred. Well, Romney's right. And I'm sure the rivals are undeterred. His delegate lead growing, Mitt Romney gently nudged his Republican opponents toward the sidelines on Wednesday and said he was on track to wrap up the presidential nomination before the party convention next summer. Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich paid him no mind, vying to fight on in a campaign marked by persistent ideological divisions. And I wonder if they understand, you know, Newt Gingrich, to me, I think the whole thing's a freaking game for this guy. I think he's real proud of wearing his conservative credentials, whatever the hell they are. Santorum too, and they feel it's really important, and they think it means something. It doesn't. Yes, it does. It means this. It means that you are the representative of the conservative movement in America, the conservative thinkers, the conservative voters, if you will, a new conservative party. I keep thinking that that's what they got to do. Bust away from these Republicans, you know.
Yeah, then they're dead meat.
They may be dead meat, but as long as these clowns hang around in the Republican Party. What happens is the following. This ideological divide, in a year when the Republicans should be lockstep, man, against, you know, everything they've said about Obama being a screw-up, being the worst thing that ever happened, being a disaster, everything that they have been hyping, they should be lockstep, agreed on, and ready to attack come November. Instead, these guys are still playing you-know-what.
Yeah, they're playing grab it. There's no doubt.
They're playing grab ass, man, all the way on up to the convention.
That was it. Grab ass. They're playing grab ass. Grab ass. All the way up to the convention. And somehow, Gingrich and Santorum, they think that this is really, you know, I can understand if you're a conservative, and I can understand that you want to be loyal to that philosophy and to your voters. I get that. But please don't pretend. Unless you're stupid, please don't pretend that this is somehow really going to be great when what? When what happens? What do you think is going to happen, man? Let's say you get nominated. Now you're going to go out into the general election and you're going to test the theory that a conservative candidate is what the American voter wants. And you're going to lose again. You're going to lose again. Americans are conservative in some areas, but what we have found is that Americans are more pragmatic than anything else. They want what works. And sometimes what works isn't necessarily the conservative way of doing things. You know, you don't have to believe me. You watch what happens.
Yeah, you've been wrong before.
I know.
You were wrong about Rush Limbaugh apologize, and you were wrong about Giuliani.
Giuliani, huh? Boy, you guys...
No, but Giuliani.
I know, but I'm... So what if I was wrong? I'm telling you right now, I ain't going to be wrong here. I won't be wrong here. They put Santorum or Gingrich up on that ticket, and they're dead. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be coming back here in just a moment. Oh, I want to get you guys oriented toward the L.A. Animation Festival coming up this weekend. I'm going to be there on a panel... with Darren Norris, one of our actors in Team America. It's going to be a blast, and I hope you guys come out for it. It'll be in Los Angeles. I'll give you the locale, and it's this weekend. We'll be there Saturday night. The L.A. Animation Festival. We'll tell you about it in just a moment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here in our News and Information Hour. And I'm just trying to get up on our video computer, the LA Animation Festival website. You guys can head over there on your little computer, your little laptop. I don't know what you have there. Here, we found it. I'll give it to you. I'll give you a look at the site, at least, so you can see what's going on. That's a pretty good site. Here is, as you can see, the Animation Festival is at the Regent Showcase. It's going to be 614 La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles. And I believe it's, yes, here, March 7th through the 11th. So today, technically, so it started yesterday or last night, perhaps, and extends all the way through Sunday. You see there is the trailer for Team America, if you see that picture. So I'm going to be there, and there's also an opening night meet Shrek. Look at that. So there's a whole thing on Shrek. Let me show you. There's my picture there with Phil Hendry and the movie's puppeteers on stage before the screening. But I really do appreciate them giving me that little picture there. But I'm excited to see again a great guy, Darren Norris, who was the voice of Spotswood. And there you see a little picture of Matt Stone and Trey Parker there with the puppets. It says here that there's going to be the puppeteers from the movie are going to be there. Now, that ought to be something, man. How the hell do you, what is that about? I remember hearing when we were doing that movie, I walked into that set, and I remember Trey Parker and Matt Stone both were there that day, and they showed me into this studio where they had the different puppet sets, and it was almost like you were in a really cool place where the greatest, like, train sets in the world and the greatest cool toy things were happening, because the set, if you remember seeing Team America, the set for the desert, the Jeep that was racing through the desert with the terrorist in it, that was like a big train set. It was laid out on a huge stage, everything to scale, but you were standing over it. And that little Jeep was on a track, and there were little fake mountains, and the whole thing was like, wow, you know, if I had this in my garage, I would revert, I would never, you know, come out. Then they had the Eiffel Tower, and if you remember the movie, the Eiffel Tower got blown up and fell over. Well, they had it was almost three versions of the Eiffel Tower. They had the ground level version of the Eiffel Tower when it's towering over you, or where they could put the camera down at the base of the Eiffel Tower and make it look like it was huge. Then they had an aerial view Eiffel Tower, which was smaller, and then they had an even higher aerial view of the Eiffel Tower, which is smaller still. And all of these built to scale for these different scenes. They had the Mount Rushmore. If you remember, Team America's headquarters was was in Mount Rushmore. That's where the Michael Moore character was.
That's Michael Moore got blown up. You know, he was eating hot dogs.
Exactly, yeah. The Michael Moore character got blown up. The Michael Moore puppet got blown up eating his hot dogs. But they had the Mount Rushmore set as Mount Rushmore from the outside. Then they had the larger in the interior of the Mount Rushmore headquarters of Team America. And so on and on it went. And it just so happened the day that I was there, they were filming the Korean puppet scene. And I was there for lunch. I mean, I showed up just to see the set because then we did voiceover for the characters, and that was in another studio that was about, I don't know, it was not more than 100 yards away from the main studio where they were actually doing the filming, and then we'd go over to voiceover. But the day I was there, they were doing the Korean puppets, and I remember seeing the puppets as puppets will look when they don't have anybody handling them. They're just, like, slumped over, unless, of course, they're, you know...
You're going to say something dirty.
No, I'm not. So they said, those guys said, Trey Parker, Matt Stone, this is the last puppet movie we ever do. And I said, well, it's the only puppet movie you guys have done. But they said it was the hardest thing in the world to do. It was just the hardest thing. And you got to keep in mind, you know, you commit to this, you got to do it, man, because you got a studio now waiting for you to deliver a movie. And you better do it. So it was just a bitch, man, to do this flick that they thought, as we all did, would probably be a relatively simple thing to do. Because it was based on all those cornball, and a lot of you are too young to remember, but when I was a kid, we had a few of these cornball puppet shows on Saturday mornings. One of them was Supercar. But that wasn't the only one. There was the Thunderbirds, and there was Fireball XL5, I think, and all puppet based. And as the guy said, and it's very true, and it's a comedy maxim: puppets doing serious things are funny. Puppets doing funny things are not funny. So if you have a puppet trying to be funny, it's not funny unless you've got an audience of 5-year-olds. But if you have puppets trying to do karate moves and machine gunning each other, that's hysterical. And that's exactly what Team America is about. So if you guys can be out with us on Saturday night, it's at 11:30 at night. It'll start at 11:30 p.m. I'll be there along with Darren Norris, who is the voice of Spotswood. And I voiced the computer intelligence as well as the main terrorist there as they were racing through the, you know, desert. So we'll be there. I think there's going to be a Q&A. The puppeteers are going to be there. And they've promised a special guest who I don't know. I swear I don't know who it is. So, and then there will be a screening, I think, of the movie. I don't want to speak too soon, but I believe there will be. Okay. World Famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and by Dan Northcraft. Join us, won't you please, on our website for our video casts. Each and every night that we do a radio cast, we also have the video cast. And, of course, our new KFI archives are up on our homepage. Just go to Fresh Phil and click that tab, and then you'll see KFI. Those are the video casts as well as the audio. They're all download. The audio is a download. Right now, it's the full audio, and we'll get to the cleaned-up podcast later.
Phil Hendry.
Later and greater.